The public hearing will now come to order. Mrs. Stecker, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Kenworth?
Here, yes.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Here.
Mrs. Howard? Mr. Black? Mr. Keller?
Here.
Mrs. Nelson?
Here. On November 14, 2011, the Board of Education of Glen Ellen School District 41 adopted a resolution of levy intent for the 2011 tax levy. Notice of a December 12, 2011 truth in taxation hearing was advertised on December 1, 2011 in Gatehouse Media Suburban Newspapers, EBA Suburban Life Publications, a newspaper of general circulation in DuPage County covering the communities of Glen Ellen, Wheaton, Carroll Stream, Lombard, and Glendale Heights, and the tentative levy was placed on display. The board will take action on the 2011 tax levy during its regularly scheduled meeting, which will follow this hearing. To date, we have not received any comments regarding the 2011 tentative tax levy. Are there any members of the public who wish to provide testimony? Thank you. Welcome.
Yes. Protocolist Nelson.
Right up here, if you'd like to. Yep, absolutely.
Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Willie DiFabio. In the way of a brief introduction, my wife and I moved here in 1989. And at that point, our kids started with District 41 in kindergarten, and the right number of years later, they graduated from Hadley. And they're better people because of what they got here at 41. We're incredibly grateful for what they learned. In fact, they're productive citizens now. So I come here as a parent. And about the same time, I started an involvement with the district as a volunteer. And I continued that for a number of years in various capacities, whether it's through the PTA, leadership and some referendum committees and facility committees. I even did time behind that wall, or I should say. So I'm familiar with some of the challenges that you all face. So I come here as a volunteer. And then about 3 years ago, I started working for the district. I don't know if that's the correct term, but as a substitute teacher. So I kind of brought in another aspect or vision in my capacity since 1989. But through all of that time, I've been two other things that have transcended those. I've been a taxpayer. My wife and I have been a taxpayer since we moved here and bought the house. And we've done that more than willingly because we see it as an incredible investment. Probably the most important investment that we make is in paying the taxes so you all can do what you need to do. So children come out of here better than when they started. The fifth rule I guess I have is I'm a believer in what you all do. And that's why I continue to invest my time and energy in District 41. I've seen in so many instances where the staff and the teachers and the support people have done just great, great things with children and with sometimes very limited resources. In the business that you all are in, what makes it unique is not the taxes, but it's the passion that's a prerequisite for anybody that wants to be successful, whether as a board member or as a teacher or as an administrator. You must have that passion that will carry you through those difficult days and those extreme challenges that you have. So I bring a rather wide perspective, but I also come to you tonight saying one thing very clearly. I sure hope, or I assume, that you all are more current with what's going on than I am. I don't have the connection, I don't have the involvement at your level that I used to have. So I say that also as acknowledging your expertise, but also to come to the couple of points, a tremendous compliment to the board and to the administration. I know what it's like when you get that passion mixed in with all kinds of people and all kinds of personalities and the convoluted state finance laws and the federal requirements that you're under, as well as the demands of parents and staff. And I think it's a tremendous achievement to be not only where you're at with a surplus, but but to have so many people on your staff step up to the plate, whether it's Jennifer Basile, a kindergarten teacher, or Shannon Cross, principal, or Emma Welsh, a counselor. I mean, the list goes on and on. You have such a dedicated staff that is so very focused on doing what's critical for the children. So I want to say that I compliment you all on that achievement, and you can imagine the thousands of board members that are incredibly envious of the position that you're in. So I absolutely compliment you and thank you as a taxpayer, as a parent, as a believer. My concern is, my quandary is, I'm not quite sure what it is, but it's what I wanted to say to you all. When you're at this point and you're looking at the dollars and the cents, and you're looking at all the great things that have happened, you still have one thing to deal with, one real, real critical thing to deal with. And that's that sixth school that you have. And that sixth school are those, I don't know how many portables there are, but there are an awful lot of them. And you have the equivalent of a school full of children going in and out of those buildings that are not that conducive to learning. A lot of learning goes on because of the staff and the dedication. You have children going into that building that are not just the best way to go about your job, not the best way for them to go about their job. So I hope in closing that your legacy isn't looking at a surplus and giving it back or whatever happens. I hope your legacy is to be the board that finally says, we've had enough. We are going to do one thing. We are going to get rid of the portables. And we're going to put the buildings where they belong. And I know that's difficult, but I hope that you're the people, that you're the board, that people say, yeah, those are the ones that finally got rid of the portables and all the challenges that go with them, because that's still the albatross that's hanging around everybody's neck. I wish you well with that, and I will always stand at the ready to be a volunteer to help in any way that I can. And I thank you very much for listening to me, and I thank you for your professionalism, your dedication, and for being that board that hopefully you board members, when you drive out of this parking lot every meeting, you stop and you think, what did I do for kids today? What did I do at this meeting? Because I trust you will have a good answer, but I challenge you to take that mental test each time you leave this building. Thank you very, very much for listening.
Thank you, Mr. DeFabio. Anyone else? Thank you. May I have a motion to adjourn the public hearing?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Cavalli?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Owen?
Yes.
Mr.
Black? Yes. Thank you. Right into the public regular meeting. The Board of Education regular meeting will now come to order. Mr. Ellis, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we get into the meeting, I just want to acknowledge a birthday that we won't be here to celebrate. It will be Mr. Black on December 19th. In which he will turn 40. So, a little happy birthday before next week. It's a big one.
You're almost at 39. Sorry, not 40.
Oh, your wife told us 40.
Oh. She likes to get around.
Well, 39. Still important. End of a decade. All right. Should we hold off before Tara calls in? Okay.
You have to get permission.
Okay. Board member Tara Costa Howard is not able to attend the meeting in person due to employment-related obligations. In accordance with District 41 policy, Mrs. Howard notified the superintendent's office on December 9th that she would not be physically present for the board meeting but would like to participate in the meeting by phone. May I have a motion to approve Mrs. Howard's participation by phone in tonight's meeting?
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Stanwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Mrs. Decker, roll call, please, for the meeting.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondra?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard? Mr. Black?
Here.
Mr. Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. And we will notify, we will make a call to Mrs. Howard a little bit later in the agenda.
Mm-hmm. Are there any members of the public who wish to present, who wish to address the board at this time? All right. First is our presentations, reports, and initiatives.
And Karen is going to provide us this evening, Karen Carlson is going to provide us this evening with just a an update and overview of some of the work that we've undertaken as part of the long-range plan action steps. And you've heard bits and pieces about the think tank work and the foreign language work, and we thought we'd take this opportunity to just give you some insight into where we are. And Karen wants to show you just a little bit of imagery around what kind of work the think tank is doing and give you some thought as to what may occur in the future. So, Karen, I'll turn it over to you.
I'm going to actually start with the foreign language task force, too. And seems it's a little bit repetitive of what was in the board report and that, but as you know, we received a planning grant to look at foreign language instruction at the elementary level. So this summer, we had three members of Glenbard West join us, along with Katie. She's kind of been a go-between, Katie McCluskey. And then a handful of teachers, both at Hadley and some elementary teachers. And we started with really just exploring kind of the research out there around foreign language instruction. And we looked both at just from a program perspective as well as the brain research. And as I mentioned, it was kind of, it's hard to argue with this, but there are academic benefits when learning a foreign language. And it's academic benefits in all areas, literacy, math, science, social studies. And then what we discovered is that even the earlier that a language is introduced, the greater the So we kind of looked at that research. We also tried to kind of understand the path that our kids follow going from Hadley to high school and then what they offer our kids and how successful our kids are. And we did a little bit of somewhat of goal setting and kind of like, what do we really want out of this? And we've kind of there's really two desires. Do you want just foreign language instruction for kids, or do you want biliteracy, which would mean kids are able to read, write, speak, and listen in two languages? Foreign language instruction, at a traditional level, usually you learn to speak a foreign language, and some kids are, you know, if they stick with it, they may reach biliteracy, but it tends not to be as strong. And what we found out with the foreign language instruction at the elementary level is that when kids are in what we call a dual language program or an immersion program, the success we saw in other districts is that their kids were truly becoming they were biliterate by fifth grade, actually by fourth grade, but they continue to see the benefits. So we, through Julie's help, she did kind of an appeal to parents to encourage some interest in joining us on the foreign language site visits. We heard from 17 parents, which was within a couple days, who expressed an interest, and 11 of them were actually able to go. And both Erica and John joined us as well. And so we visited five different districts. The most popular program that we were able to see was dual language. That tends to be what most districts are offering. We were able to see what they call FLEF, which is foreign language instruction at the elementary school. And one district actually had that. So we saw the five different schools. We've since kind of met. The parents came together. We processed that. John was able to join us at that meeting. And then we've met as a committee again. And now five of those parents have decided to join the committee as well. So we're processing through that. We were able to secure one more visit to see a Chinese immersion program that we'll visit after the first of the year. So what we plan to do is kind of assimilate all of that information and kind of put together a recommendation that we would bring to you. We do know that the dual language may be an opportunity to go down that route instead of the bilingual program like we have at Churchill. But we kind of get some mixed messages from the state, so there would be some things we'd want to be clear on as we move forward with that, whether or not you have to vote or that sort of thing. But so really, our last conversation was with the group was really about kind of those primary goals: is it biliteracy and looking at dual language, or is it just foreign language instruction? and what that might look like, what it might cost, some of those kinds of things. So hopefully we'll bring that recommendation to you later this spring. Some of the members of the committee have a very strong interest in doing a parent survey because there's some mixed, I think, opinions on the group as to whether or not they think that our parents would really value that and want that at an early age. And I would say early indicators based on the response we heard from parents and wanting to join us so quickly and very positive that I think there is an interest, and we have language at lunch. And I know for a number of years I've heard from parents how they'd love to see something more than just language at lunch. So that's kind of where we're at with foreign language. Steve?
What about surveying the students? Is there a difference between what the parents want and what the students want?
You know, we actually talked a little bit about that, and we actually wanted to connect with some of our 9th and 10th graders over at the high school who left the program to kind of get their opinion as well. But I think surveying the students, I think both at Hadley from a perspective of what would you have wanted more of type thing, and then our elementary students as well. That was one of the things we had a conversation about too, is when we did the visits, and Eric and Lisa, the little kindergartners, they have such an authentic accent when they're young and they start to learn that language. And what the Hadley teachers had mentioned is a lot of their kids, that the area that's easiest is usually the speaking piece, mm-hmm. but that's where our junior high kids lack the confidence. It's, mm-hmm. they're embarrassed or they don't have that kind of accent, and they think they sound funny and they're not as much of a risk taker mm-hmm. when they're first kind of starting out at a little level than that. But I think that's a great idea to survey. Mm-hmm. The students as well. Not that that would determine whether or not we would go forward, but I think it would give us another
one. I thought it was interesting you were talking about how you learn language younger and help them with other subjects. Do you see that with ESL students, like that start very, get to our district at the kindergarten, where they know another language and then are learning English? Do you see any of that, going from the other perspective?
Well, some of the research that we've seen and what we've even experienced is that if kids learn to read in their first language, the transition to a second language tends to be quicker. But when we met with some of the districts, that was one of our concerns, is that what we saw was that the kids who English is their first language, their test scores, they outperformed the district level and building level by, in some districts, third grade, others it was fourth and beyond, but the native Spanish speakers continued to lag behind. And so when we started talking to them, what we learned was it is a type of, we think it's the amount of instruction. And there's different models. You'll hear them call like a 90-10, where they start out in kindergarten, 90% would be in Spanish, 10% in English. And then they decreased it to where it's 50-50. And the one district who has probably the best test results starts with a 50-50 model. And they revamped their program 2 years ago. They used to be a 90-10 and have gone to 50-50, where you learn the day is spent half in English and half in Spanish. And they've got the best results for both of the kids. So like our bilingual program, which is where they're learning predominantly in Spanish, I mean, it gives us an opportunity to kind of reevaluate, is that the best way to approach it? And I think our ESL students, what all they're getting is we're just teaching them in English. We're not helping them maintain any of their native, unless their parents choose to do that on their own. And some of our parents do, either on their own or through Saturday school. And that's part of the conversation we've had, what model would we lean towards? Would it be the 50-50 and some of that? And so it was a great conversation to have, and we're looking at what the research shows from those other districts as well. And it's a great question.
I think for me, when you look at this as foreign language, it's more than foreign language. It's really, I think what we learned is that the kids who go through an immersion program and learn another language, it's a do better on average than the kids who don't in terms of their educational growth, capabilities, and knowledge. That is true for, oddly enough, that is true for those that aren't necessarily native speakers, but not always the case for those that are native speakers, which to me, you know, still means there's another variable in there of what makes, you know, kids do better in school. Obviously, my conclusion is foreign language will make you do better, score-wise at least. But there's another variable for those kids that are native speakers. For some reason, they're not doing better than the general population on average. So there's something still missing in their portfolio. You know.
One of the districts equated that to socioeconomic data.
That's a huge factor with Schomburg,
and it is, you know, that a very strong correlation. And that's why when we talked with Schomburg, we felt strongly that they weren't going to accept that, and what are we going to do to make sure that they're all successful?
The last quick comment I'd make is that this wasn't, maybe John, it came up at some of your site visits, but there was a little side conversation as we walked in and out of the buildings, and one of the anecdotal takeaways was that this starting at the youngest level was really building a more collaborative environment with the kids, and they saw the side effect of that was more interspersing at lunch and playing together and all those things where because they know each other on a different level and language brings them together. And so, you know, that certainly is, again, it's anecdotal evidence, but the teachers talked a little bit about that as we were walking out, and the social worker who was with us. And I think with all of our work in the district around building a caring environment, and we talk about bullying and all that, that this, I think, is just another, you know, peg in the ladder to think about and how that really breaks down misunderstandings because you're learning the culture piece as well. So there's
and
some other benefits.
Parents as well.
Yeah, they talked about that. You're right. Much more investment.
So now I kind of just slide into the think tank. And this is another group that started this fall, and you would have noticed it as kind of part of that long-range plan. And part of the reason for it was really, you know, we know we only have so much time in the school day, and every content area is competing for that time. And we've got the rigor of the new Common Core. We know we need to be paying more attention to STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and the new term they're now kind of still throwing out there is STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics, because they don't want you to forget about the arts. And then just the whole 21st century learning. We've had the learning characteristics, and how do we kind of raise them to the forefront in what we do? And so when I put out a kind of call for membership, a couple of the things that I put committee member expectations or experiences, and some of the things I was looking for were the ability to think outside the box, because we knew we were going to kind of have to start, you know, what could we possibly do differently? A positive attitude when approaching new and challenging tasks. And then some of the very typical vitamin norms, doing the readings and that, but one was to serve as a teacher leader and positively promote the work of the group. Because that always is hard when you're kind of out there thinking about new things, is to be able to kind of go back and, you know, for lack of a better word, to really sell it to your colleagues without, you know, the feeling of, okay, here's one more thing, and we don't want it to be about one more thing, it's about working smarter rather than harder. So again, this group has started out doing a lot of research. And some of it is reading about just project-based learning, but, you know, the global achievement gap, 5 Minds for the Future, so just a, kind of a lot of the new readings out there around kind of the direction that the whole college and career readiness, survival skills for our future workforce, things like that. So we have teachers and administrators. There's about 20 of us. All of the gifted specialists kind of got on board with it. Our library media specialists, almost every grade level is represented, and we do have people from every school in that. And we're just starting with the elementary folks before we kind of bring on and add other people. So we have done a lot of reading. We've looked at articles. We sent one home meeting, even just viewing websites, just to kind of see what was out there. And now the group has really kind of evolved that they're on their own trying to find things that they send to the rest of the group to kind of check this out and look at that. So we're still kind of building that background knowledge, and I can tell some of them just want to, like, get to it. Let's just, like, find something we're going to do and do it. And we did take some time at one meeting where I wanted them to kind of think about kind of those bigger ideas and that goal, and they went right to what we might be able to do as opposed to really what do we want to achieve. Mm-hmm. So we have to go back to that and try to reconcile them. But we do have a, first of all, we sent a number of people out to kind of little different conferences that, and we had a subgroup. Ann was able to join us on Friday. But we went and visited a STEM lab at a junior high in Lagrange, and it just kind of gave us another perspective and kind of the work that they've done there. But as we sent people or gone to these little conferences, the group went to hear someone speak at the bilingual conference as well. They come back and present just to kind of get people thinking, those kinds of things. We actually, we're now moving towards having some guest speakers come. And so this Wednesday, we have a parent from Ben Franklin who runs a design firm, and he's just going to kind of come and talk to us about their design process that they take. We also have the author of this book, Jim Malacca, who is coming in January. He happens to be the cousin of one of our committee members, which is why we're fortunate to get him to come. But he also has a chapter in the 21st Century book that you guys got last year too from that conference we have gone to. And he's done a lot actually with spaces more and designing like high-tech high, you know, those kinds of things. But he's going to come and talk to us a little bit about ThinkQuest, which is all about project-based learning. And that's probably one of the primary areas that we've kind of really landed on, and you might hear it referred to as problem-based learning or project-based learning. He refers to it as enriched learning projects, but it's really kind of it's a student-centered approach, to it simply put, where they kind of tackle or wrestle with a real-life problem. And it's been very popular at the university level and high schools, and we've seen it at middle schools, and it's starting to kind of gain some momentum around the elementary level. And so Jim's actually going to kind of talk a little bit about it because there's some training opportunities to do some transfer hours right here. And we've got some teachers who are really interested in that. Before I look at just this video clip that we've heard on a YouTube video, we won't watch the whole thing, but the plan is to really, we still want to identify some different sites to go visit, see what we can kind of come up with, but it's to kind of really create a vision of what this could look like. We have some teachers who are slowly starting to try out some things. When we're at Ben Franklin, I think one of those teachers will share some of what she's been doing. A couple primary teachers at Lincoln, one of, they've got some ideas after kind of doing the research, you know, are there some things we can start small? Ideally, it'd be great if we could pilot something next year. I don't know if we can get that far along. Hopefully, we will to bring something, but I think there's got to be some training and some things to bring through. But I think the nice thing about it is we're gaining momentum with the staff that's on the committee to really start trying some things. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of problem-based learning or project-based learning from an elementary perspective. It's called From Worms to Wall Street. And when you view it with the first grade class, kind of look at it from the lens when they're on the computer. And unfortunately, it's not at the beginning. We're going to have to stick with it. We won't watch the whole thing. But to kind of see the tasks that they're completing on the computer and even the graphic organizers that they're using to help them with their thinking. But, so Michael, show it to you.
Nobody likes me, everybody hates me. It's ugly worms. Mom thinks mommy, I'm short and juicy one. It's the busy, fuzzy, wuzzy worm.
These first graders at Newtham Park Elementary dig worms, and they design an entire project around them with the help of their teacher, Kathy Humer.
Here's one. Pick it up, camera. And they wanted to do animals. They had ideas. Let's do snakes. Let's do, you know, horses. Let's do dogs. You know, and so I keep raising the question to them, well, why? What is it that you want to know? Well, they want to know about, well, where do these animals live? So I said, well, are we really going to be able to go look for snakes? You know, that might not be possible. Can you think of something else that might be similar? And someone just said, let's do worms. I said, okay, well, what do we know about worms? What do we need to find out about worms? Phase one, which leads us into phase two, which is the field work, the actual work that they're doing, whether it's field trips, lab work, experiments.
We did an experiment on dead worms. We smelled them and they didn't smell good. And we had to pick them up and fill the veins.
Worms are just one of the subjects students explore in-depth at Newtham Park, a K-5 science magnet school in Newport News, Virginia, that has embraced the concept of project-based learning. Each class picks a topic to study for the semester. They then plan a research phase, which includes field trips to gather information.
Transportation for sex.
At the conclusion of the project, they share their findings in oral presentations, digital slideshows, and display boards, which are viewed and critiqued by their parents and their peers.
Project-based learning was really the delivery model that we felt would allow kids to learn and really learn about what they want to learn about. I mean, so many years we've been pumping kids full of stuff that we think is appropriate. And really, in many instances, maybe that was successful, but it's much more successful and exhilarating when kids have the input that we allow them to have here at Newtham Park.
Students here have chosen to study everything from space flight to homelessness. This first grade class decided to explore cystic fibrosis, a disease affecting one of their classmates.
One of our students has CF, and we're trying to learn about CF to see what things outward. You can start getting into the person's lungs and pancreas. We hope to find out that there's a cure for CF.
Students use programs like PowerPoint and a series of thinking maps to turn good project concepts into exemplary work products.
The students of today are really more in tune with everything that they have coming in at them visually. So using the technology to represent their learning has actually increased the quality of their work.
Even with the latest technology tools, project-based learning can be challenging for teachers.
So we came up with some questions for Ms. Harbaugh, and she's coming in today to tell us more, isn't she?
Oh, good. Okay. It's easier to teach out of a textbook, where this day it tells me to do this, and this day it tells me to do that. So in a way, you've got to be willing to work a little hard, too, to do it this way, even though it looks like the kids are doing all the hard work. There's a lot of planning that goes on behind it to make sure that the work is there for them.
Do we have anybody in the classroom with Alpha?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Since several of Ms. Breland's students have asthma, they're studying pets, focusing on pets that don't make asthma worse. As part of every research project, students seek out experts, like a guest speaker from the local hospital.
The lungs are made up of different kinds of tissue.
They know that they don't have all the answers, and it's okay. They also know that Ms. V doesn't have all the answers, and it doesn't bother her a bit. And so we sit back and we go, okay, well, who can we call? Who can we ask?
Thank you.
At lunchtime, students get to test their social skills and basic math,
13.
Selling everything from walk-a-thon pledges to marigolds.
We have marigolds, we have two of these left. They're mixed flowers. Those just all touch flowers like this flower, this whole patch. It'll probably be like that.
The plan is to
allow
a class investigation into the stock market.
If I follow what the stock market was, we actually invested in fantasy stocks. We were thinking about investing in some penny stocks and seeing how much money we could make on the stock exchange. However, that became repetitive and truthfully somewhat boring.
Instead, the class decided to create their own business. They bought seeds, grew the plants, and made sales brochures, funding the entire operation through the sale of Flower Power stock.
We ended up going around and sold 10-cent shares of our stock in our company, and we actually raised over $75.
But the success of the fourth grain plant project sowed the seeds of another lesson in real-life learning. It led to the mounting of a hostile takeover attempt by Miss Shields' fifth graders.
Miss Shields' classes, the fifth grade, is planning to take and buy all the stock and then go for like 5% of their stock and take over their business. So we'll be in total control of their business.
The process of learning project-based lessons has had a positive impact on everything from test scores to classroom behavior.
Our test scores have improved, mainly I think because of the fact that we've connected the learning to real-world problems, and the integration of technology has helped students to actually produce quality products. So that's the reward, and to me, it's been probably the most rewarding way of teaching and learning that I've experienced in my 30 years.
For more information on what works in public education, go to edutopia.org.
Hopefully it just kind of gives you a little snapshot of what it can look like. And, I mean, I thought the graphic organizers we had on the computer, I mean, that was as a first grader with the connection to the real world problems and that. So that's kind of one of the strands we're kind of grappling with, seeing what might that look like, and can we make a larger scale than that. So again, we hope to bring kind of our more specific recommendation to you.
Thanks, Karen.
Thanks.
Can we call Karen?
Yes. Tara, this is Ann, and the board has voted for you to join the meeting, and we are just prepared to start our action items. Are you able to join us?
I am able to join you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Tara.
Under Hi, everybody.
Hi, Tara.
Under action items, consent agenda, are there any items board members would like removed from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, which includes human resources, personnel reports, employment recommendations, finance, facilities and operations, treasurer's report, investment schedule, monthly revenue, expenditure summary report, summary of bills and payroll, school district payment order, vandalism damage report, disposal of surplus property, the 2011-2012 FOIA report, and item three, other matters, including board meeting minutes of November 28, 2011 regular meeting and November 28, 2011 regular meeting closed session.
Motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Bondurant?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Howard.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yes.
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations. Item one, board policy. Second reading and adoption. Item 420, or AP, fiscal philosophy administrative procedure. At its November 2011 meeting, the board discussed proposed revisions to the administrative procedure. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation to approve the recommended revisions to 420 AP and adopt the administrative procedure as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Discussion.
So, everyone agreed with the 25%? Is that what this document means?
That means that's based on the conversations that came from Finance Committee, that was the recommendation to the full board.
That a plan is presented.
That a plan would be presented if it exceeds or goes below.
Right. But there's no binding act, though. There's still a board elected every year that has to look at the finances that year and decide what to do.
Correct.
Yeah, I think that's right. I still interpret this, if we're underneath, there has to be a plan to get it back up. I still interpret it that way. This, you know, budget will be implemented to annually increase the fund balance. But I think the point is there'll be a discussion.
I think we have a discussion one way or the other. If we're above or if we're below.
Well, this says specifically that there will be a plan to increase it.
That the threshold for your fund balance you're approving as 25 percent of your total budget. That's and that if you are below that, that you would bring a plan to raise that up. Now that doesn't require the board to in fact do so.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that was
more specific in that area than the other thing. Well, it's more problematic if you are going to get taken over by the state because you are keep spending more money than you take in.
That's deficits.
As opposed to the other way around.
That's deficits. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
You can still stay at 20% and not the deficit spending.
Right. But you were saying that below 10% is very specific.
No, the 25%. So the plan will be implemented to annually increase the fund balance. At 25%.
I suppose you could interpret that too, that the budget plan could be that there's not a change. It could be that as well. To me, when I read this, I see what you're saying down that first bullet, is that budget plan is the conversation that the board has in concert with the administration.
Yeah, but the concept was if we go below this, we have a conversation. If we go below that, we have another conversation. This is pretty specific. This says we will annually increase it. But I think we all understand the intent of this is to have a conversation.
Correct. That's my understanding. Yeah. That's my understanding as well. And we had the discussion at the last full board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Any other comments?
All right, roll call.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yep.
Mr. Bondrick?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Second item, resolution to adopt the 2011 tax levy. At its November meetings, the board discussed the administration's recommendation for the 2011 levy. The levy recommendation for 2011 is a 3.69% increase over the previous year's extension. The district actually expects an increase of 2.59% under the Property Tax Limitation Act. This increase is based on a CPI of 1.5%. After considering a number of scenarios, the board identified an interest in maintaining the levy request and abating a portion or all of the bond and interest levy, $2,727,800. A resolution to abate will be presented to the board for approval in January after the approval of the levy and the interfund transfer of funds from the education and operation and maintenance funds to the debt service fund. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion.
So, a question, and what you read sounded like the way I'm interpreting this recommendation is there will be an abatement of the 2.7. What I thought I heard you say is a portion for the 2.7 in what you just read.
It says, let me reread that. This increase, this is CPI levy, is based on a CPI of 1.5%. After considering a number of scenarios, the board identified an interest in maintaining the levy request and abating a portion or all of the bond and interest levy, $2,727,800. So a portion
or all. The way I'm interpreting what's written here is that we are...
The recommendation is for all.
For all.
Right.
So
the board's discussion was relative to some portion or all.
All we're voting on now is a request.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So... Well, you want to request a lot. Yeah, that's all we're voting on.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but we're doing it
in the spirit of understanding that we will abate the 2.7 or that we will do a portion for the 2.7.
The following recommendation lays out the exact request that we're making for a fund transfer to the bond and interest.
Which is 2.7.
That's correct.
So is that everyone's understanding then? Mm-hmm. It is 2.7?
Mm-hmm. As I read this.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Any other comments? Questions? All right, roll call, please.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenworth?
Yep.
Mr. Bondrak?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. Superintendent's report.
Oh, we have one more. We have one more action item.
Action item.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading ahead. Pardon me. Item 3. Resolution to adopt the interfund transfer of debt service fund to debt service fund. In order for the board to abate the bond and interest levy, there must be a surplus in the debt service fund. As a result, we must complete an interfund transfer of existing reserves in order to have a surplus to abate. The resolution affirming the action to abate will be presented to the board for approval in January. May I have a motion to approve the interfund transfer of debt service as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Discussion?
What is the requirement to transfer? Is it because the money has to be in the fund in order to pay the bond and interest, right?
The law says you cannot abate if you don't have a surplus mm-hmm. in that account. Okay. And we levy the amount of bond and interest due that year, so we never accumulate a surplus in that account. So in order to abate, we have to do a transfer.
So this surplus ends up being over the 2.7, whether it be a surplus or not the exact amount?
It's the exact amount.
Okay. And by taking it out of these accounts, are there any impacts to that we should be aware of?
We're reducing our fund balance. This is coming out of our reserves.
Okay, so all out of reserves.
Correct. And there was a question raised, and I can pass out the documents that Dan asked a question about what percentage of our fund balance would be left with this abatement, and this gives you that information based on our audited figures for FY 11.
The only thing that I think we've, now that I've had a little chance to study and get a little more clear, is the abatement is actually occurring for FY 12.
Mm-hmm. The FY 12 budget.
Right. So it'd be, I think it would be better to look at what the PMA projections or your projections, whichever are more current, to truly understand what that is.
Think
I wanted to use actual numbers, so that's why I didn't incorporate this year's budget. Fiscal year 2012 budget. I just took the actuals as of June 30th, 2011, what were our operating expenditures for revenues and then the fund balances, operating portion of those fund balances, and backed out the calculation for the levy for the bond payment for this next year. I could have also entered into projected revenues and expenditures for this year, but just chose to take a frozen point in time. Telling you that if we were to close the book, we close the books as of June 30th, 2011, what would that fund balance be if we were to back up that bond and interest payment?
Mm-hmm. Certainly when we have actual figures for the following year, we'll be able to update that. But
it gives us a snapshot of where we end up, is what you're saying.
That's
about
right.
Mm-hmm. It's a moving target.
And just transferring this money put us in a position, you know, let's just say something crazy happens where we can't bring it back, or...
But you mean this year we can't bring it back, or is
in the next 30 days something crazy happens and decide that, you know, can you transfer it back into the ed fund and all that if you need to?
Well, you could by resolution to transfer it back.
So you can do that.
Once you pass the January resolution to abate the money, we would contact.
Then you're done. That's in 30 days.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
If I apply this report to our REP, we're still above the the threshold.
Correct.
So theoretically, for next year, we'd have to put a plan together to address the surplus.
You'd have to discuss that. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the AP says that the administration will put a plan together.
The board will determine, will make a recommendation, that's correct, with Finance Committee, mm-hmm. as to what to do with that surplus.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I have the exact language in front of me. Mm-hmm. Good point.
It says if the fund exceeds 25%, a plan will be made based on board approval or recommendation from the superintendent and the Finance mm-hmm. Committee. Mm-hmm.
So, good process.
Yeah, I like the process. This makes sense.
Any other questions or comments? Roll call, please.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrack?
Yes.
Mrs. Howard?
Yes.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes. All right, superintendent's report.
Before we begin the superintendent's report, Mrs. Howard, do you wish to stay with us, or will you be leaving?
I'll stay with you guys.
Okay. I'm going to have four quick things for you. The enrollment report, as you can see, is always very much the same. We go up 10, we drop 2, we go up 4, and drop 5. So we're very, very stable and continue to be so, which is a good thing for us. I wanted to remind you that if you are interested in going to the Forensic Rattle at Law Conference, which is scheduled for January 28th from 8:30 till 12:30, that you let Maureen Stucker know as soon as you possibly can. This is an offer that is free of charge to Forensic clients, and has always been something that I think we value pretty highly as being a very good conference. The other thing I wanted to remind you is that if you have not given me your response to the January 18th special board meeting, if you could do so either verbally tonight or send an acceptance to the Outlook. Some people seem to be having some difficulty with their Outlook coming through, so if you wonder whether you actually approved, if you'll check in with me before the end of the evening, because as of right now, recorded in my Outlook are 3 approvals. I know I have 5. So if you haven't responded, please let me know. And then finally, I wanted to just let you know that Bob and I did attend the Joint Review Board, the Village, for the Village TIF last Thursday. We indicated to them at this time we had some serious reservations about the TIF. We expressed to them a series of reservations in alignment with District 87. And as a result of those concerns, we asked if they would consider a continuance, one more continuance. As you know, the law would allow us to go up to 30 days before giving our recommendation. The 29th day happens to be Friday, and we will have a joint review board meeting again this Friday where we will enter in our final recommendation for that TIF. So that's an update. The village did provide us some additional information, and certainly was open to listening to our concerns and working towards having continued open communication about the concerns we have and the information that they have to share. So that's my report for this evening. Thank you.
Right, board reports. Any members of the board who wish to give a report at this time? No meetings, huh? Okay.
All right. That's
good. Discussion items. We don't have any scheduled items. I do want to make an update to the board. I will not be able to attend the LEND meeting on the 16th.
The LEND is canceled. LEND is canceled.
There you go.
Everybody got a notice today. You haven't seen your email, I know.
Thank you. Never mind. Anything else? All right. Upcoming meetings include January 9th, 2012, Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30 p.m. at Benjamin Franklin School. January 18th, 2012, Board of Education special meeting, 5:30 here at the Central Services Office. and January 23rd, 2012, the Board of Education regular meeting at 7:30 p.m. in the Central Services Office. Are there any other matters to be considered by the Board? All right, public participation. Any members of the public who wish to address the Board at this time? Right, seeing none. The Board has determined it has a need to adjourn to closed session to discuss collective negotiating matters between the district and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more classes of employees, litigation when an action against, affecting, or on behalf of the particular district has been filed and is pending before a court or administrative tribunal, or when the district finds that an action is probable or imminent, in which case the basis for the finding shall be recorded and entered into the closed session minutes. May I have a motion to adjourn to closed session?
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes.
Mr. Bondrick?
Yes.
Mr. Power?
Stop.
Mr. Black?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Nelson?
Yes. Thank you very much. There will be no action upon return from closed session.